Hello and welcome to another SPAC Insider podcast, where we bring an independent eye in interviewing the targets of SPAC transactions and their SPAC partners. Spot lithium prices may be down, but Stardust Power believes that makes now an even more important time to build new U.S.-based lithium refineries. I'm Nick Clayton, and this week I speak with Roshan Pujari, co-founder and CEO of Stardust Power, and Chandra Patel, CEO and chairman of Global Partner Acquisition Corp. II. The two announced a $490 million business combination in November. Roshan explains how Stardust's plans to build its lithium refinery in Oklahoma are progressing, and why he believes the company's methods should command a premium for its resources. Chandra, meanwhile, tells us how his team is working through a deal-making playbook involving both SPAC IPOs and SPAC vehicles they can take over post-IPO, like Global Partner II. Take a listen. So just to start off, Roshan, congratulations on being able to nail down Muskogee, Oklahoma as the site for your new lithium refinery. You know, what was that selection process like, and what were some of the big criteria you were looking for on a site?
Yeah, first of all, thanks for having us today, Nick. Really appreciate the time to talk with you and Chandra. We're at Stardust Power is really excited about developing our lithium refinery in Muskogee, Oklahoma, specifically Southside Industrial Park within Port Muskogee. So in evaluating sites, we like the strong central location of Oklahoma, central to both supply and offtake. The site has excellent logistical efficiency, being connected to major highways as well as rail, but also connected to the largest inland water system in the United States for ease of use on our hub and spoke model. We like Oklahoma as a jurisdiction because as a legacy energy producer, it is very attuned to the energy space, strong partnership with the government in an up to $257 million incentive package. And maybe most importantly, Oklahoma has a strong, skilled workforce in energy engineering.
Great. And for Chandra, you know, this business combination between Global Partner II and Stardust was announced before some of those details had been finalized. But what made you confident in Stardust's ability to execute on those plans? And how did it stand out amid your target search?
You know, our target search was we were very focused on what are SPACs supposed to be focused on? They're supposed to be capital formation for growth industries and growth companies. And obviously, the sector that Roshan and his company is focused on definitely fits within the growth sector. I think from a priority perspective for our country, obviously, from a national security perspective, and for a variety of reasons, this sector is a sector that we, you know, the country should be focused on. And I think investors are focused on. We focused on this particular opportunity because of that general thesis and this management team and what it's been able to accomplish already in this sector. It's by its very nature, it's a growth-oriented story. And a growth-oriented story, as all entrepreneurs know and people who have backed entrepreneurs, is a path littered with many obstacles that one has to overcome. And when you're involved in energy and entitlements, that's very difficult. And I think Roshan and his team has a strong pedigree in that. And what we had seen them already execute was very impressive.
Right. And sort of on the other end of things, do you guys feel like the announcement of this combination and therefore the news that Stardust would soon become a public company was an advantage in going into those discussions with the other stakeholders around the refinery project?
Yes, I believe so. You know, part of the reason to take the company public at this stage is for that and the opportunity to aggregate supply from junior miners. So already it has been very effective. Given the large development cost and construction cost for building these refinery, the assurance of being a public company and access to capital markets financing has been helpful.
Great. And can you walk us through the refinery project itself? You know, what is your development timeline looking like and what kind of capacity will it have once it's completed?
Sure. So we are developing what will be one of, if not the largest lithium refineries in America. We're using a phased approach to reduce risk. So first, in selecting our site, we engaged in very strong technical due diligence from an environmental perspective, from an industry perspective, to understand that this site would be ideal for a lithium refinery. And happy to say that it really was so. So engaged with some of the best engineers in the space, Hatch Engineering. And then looking at our development cycle, we're building two lines that would total 50,000 tons per annum. So we'll develop the first production line and use the revenue from that to build the second production line. So using a phased approach to reduce risk. It typically takes a couple of years to build these refineries, and we're looking to start major construction end of the year or early next year.
And, you know, in your materials mentioned that there's a lot of, you know, potential for a DOE and DOD grants and supporting this process. What is that application process been like, and what's the timeline for those?
The federal government has been very proactive in trying to create a resilient American supply chain. Just recently, the DOE announced another major grant of more than $3 billion, really targeting in on the lithium sector. There are DOD grants and other financings available. And at Stardust Power, our intent is to seek all these opportunities we can.
Braden, are there, you know, other benefits from legislation that Stardust benefits from? I mean, are there portions of the Inflation Reduction Act, for instance, that apply to your project?
Yeah, thanks for bringing up another hallmark piece of legislation, the Inflation Reduction Act, which creates a premium for American manufactured lithium. So for consumers to receive the full benefit of the EV tax credit, the critical minerals are sourced all the way upstream to be IRA compliant, creating a premium for American manufactured products. So it also creates tax incentives based on our production. So the IRA is an important piece of legislation, which significantly helps our economics.
Yeah, that's interesting. And you touched upon, you know, your unique process for sourcing your lithium. I think, you know, most Americans are aware, at least, that, you know, a lot of the important resources for things like EV batteries are not located within the continental United States, but you have a unique approach for getting that locally.
That's right. You know, we prefer the use of lithium brines over hard rock because it has a smaller carbon and environmental footprint. Sustainability is at the core of what we're doing, thus our preference over lithium brines. America has a lot of brine resources, and the oil and gas producers have been producing brine, often rich in lithium, and paying to re-inject it or use it for other purposes. So at Stardust, we've been active in working to recycle these produced water of oil and gas producers to create the feedstock for our refinery.
Yeah, I'm interested in how that plays into your location as well, because, you know, in Oklahoma, you do have a lot of oil and gas producers in the neighborhood. Are you able to gain some more synergies with those sort of partners in the area? I mean, do they potentially gain carbon offsets or anything like that from, you know, from working with you?
Sure. We have found strong support from the oil and gas producers who themselves have very large cost for removing this wastewater produced in their oil and gas exploration and production. So we have the ability to take a cost center into an additional line of revenue with the added benefit of potential carbon credits and ESG. So it is an aligned interest in recycling their wastewater.
And in terms of just the overall process, you know, how does the cost of processing, I guess, in your case, and refining compare to the cost of extraction in a more traditional mine?
You know, there are different costs associated with each project. Our use of DLE is really focused on sustainable parts. For example, we won't use evaporation ponds, which could have negative impact to the environment. So while there is a potentially larger cost for extraction, it is made back in the end by a premium for American lithium. And leveraging our hub and spoke model, we can bring down some of those CapEx costs. So in the end of the day, it is very economical to be sustainable.
Yeah, you know, you see a lot of, you know, conversation about also just, you know, commodity prices for lithium. But I mean, do you feel like your, I guess, commodity risk, how does that play into your calculations, given that you have some of these other benefits like the locality, like the fact that it is American derived?
Yeah, that's a great question, because as we all see, the spot market has been incredibly volatile. But what that doesn't show is the agreed demand for battery-grade lithium products in the United States in the short and medium term, which we believe will increase the spot prices. What we see in the market are a lot of deals aren't done on the spot prices, and manufacturers would not sell their battery-grade lithium products at these reduced spot prices. So we see strong partnership with the EV manufacturers and other OEMs to create long-term supplies based on predictable pricing.
Great. And then just sort of moving, you know, closer to the deal, you know, from your perspective, Roshan, how closely were you following SPACs and when did the SPAC route to the public market start looking like an attractive path?
So we had been tracking the SPAC market, given our background in finance, that is a sector we knew really well. And what we saw is not just finding a SPAC, but the right partner. And that's what GPAC 2 provides. Not just a SPAC, but an aligned business partner, adding value post-combination and bringing a strong executive management team to the table. So we saw an important role for our company being public as part of our business plan, but it was really about Chandra and the team that sold us on the SPAC route.
Yeah, and Chandra, I mean, you know, you touched upon it. We talked about it at the very beginning of just sort of, you know, how this company stood out to you. I mean, I'm just interested in, you know, timing is always an interesting factor when it comes to, you know, any company going public, but particularly for, you know, a SPAC deal in which you have a little bit more control over the timing. You know, what were some of the big factors for you in terms of saying that, you know, this was the right target and now?
I think it always starts with, as I said, not just the thesis, but the management team, right? I mean, while we discuss capital markets and we discuss investment thesis, it's people who execute. And I think developing this type of project in the United States today is not easy. And I think it takes not only a certain amount of relationships and capabilities, but frankly, a commitment to the process. As you'll know, Nick, the sector is littered with people who basically saw this as more of a capital markets play. I think where we saw Roshan and his team differentiated was they're really committed to this. And as you know, as I think we've indicated, they did a lot of this, quote, the spade work, so to speak, beforehand, and developing these intimate political relationships, which is difficult at the best of times, but particularly today with, you know, all the noise around SPACs, I think was going to be very difficult. We had a lot of confidence that Roshan and his team would stay the path, so to speak. It was, you know, when one doesn't control market timing, but one controls the people you work with.
Yeah, and your materials note that you're shooting for raising a pipe of between 100 and 150 million. Just how is that process going? And what is your strategy in terms of securing the right kinds of terms and investor base involved in that?
Yeah, happy to answer that one. So, you know, we've been getting exceptional feedback on the market for the pipe. So for us, it's all about the right investors and not necessarily raising the most capital at any single stage. There are multiple opportunities for financing this company's growth, pipe included. So, you know, we're figuring out exactly what the right number is to be the best value add to the company. And we're really thoughtful of shareholder equity as well.
Sure. And just, you know, given the, I guess, the unique financing needs that your company has, I mean, do you look at it as, you know, sort of weighing the options between project finance a little bit further down the road versus equity now versus debt? How are you weighing those options, I suppose?
We're utilizing multiple buckets of financing. So project financing is a very important piece that we're getting strong receptivity from the market itself. So at the right time, we'll bring on the right project finance partners. And then as well as, you know, our sponsor commitment, including and which can include government grants as well. So a lot of different ways to finance it. The market is very supportive of our mission to build resilient American supply chains for critical minerals.
Yeah, Nick, and if I might just jump in there, I think what Roshan pointed out was important. I mean, I'm not sure which other companies are out there doing SPACs, but I doubt many of them are looking for, will be able to get project financing, right? That's usually an attribute of a more, you know, that's more of a mature capital markets product. And so I think what's differentiated again about this company is they have a kind of a potpourri of different funding options that I think the trick here is not only staging them, but finding the right mix. That is probably more a function of time, going back to, you know, what's relevant from a timing perspective. That's probably what's going to determine the ultimate financing mix, I assume, Roshan, that you guys will certainly go with.
And it's great to work with Chandra on the team on creating that composite. And that's been a great value add.
Great. And just sort of what are those capital needs like in terms of, you know, you mentioned that you're doing this in a bit of a staged approach, but, you know, what is sort of the target and how does it break down in terms of how you plan to use those proceeds?
Well, looking in the CapEx requirements for the refinery itself, it is current estimates over $1.2 billion. So large CapEx that we can phase out to reduce risk by developing the first production train first. So we don't have to build the entire facility at one go, which limits a lot of the development risk.
Great. And you know, just because at SPAC Insider, we like to really get into the nitty gritty, and it's always interesting when I have the opportunity to ask. But, you know, so Chandra, you know, you and your partners at Antarctica took over Global Partner 2 as a vehicle after it had already IPO'd, but, you know, you'd already have SPAC experience with Endurance. I'm just interested, you know, what made the sponsor takeover route attractive for you for, you know, getting your way to this deal as opposed to IPOing a new SPAC?
I think we thought that there were attractive companies out there. Right. In the space. And I think as part of our, you know, you alluded to the fact that we had previously done a SPAC, and as part of that process, we were able to, you know, meet a lot of companies, some we liked, some we didn't like, et cetera. And, you know, kind of going back to your point about timing, while the timing for SPACs at that time perhaps wasn't great, we did see that there were a lot of companies out there potentially that might still be attractive SPAC targets. So I think from our perspective, kind of going through that entire process again versus the ability to acquire a SPAC and be able to do this seemed to be the right path for us at that time.
Yeah. Well, I imagine there's a lot of people in the SPAC world that see that, you know, there's a fair amount of SPACs out there that may no longer believe that they're going to find their own combination themselves and therefore available. And it's, you know, obviously probably much cheaper and quicker to do a deal with them than to go through the whole IPO route. But I imagine there's a lot of other challenges, you know, when doing this than maybe some people might expect, you know, because you don't get to go back in time and do everything the way you would have liked to with the vehicle from the start.
To answer that question and kind of add a bit more to the prior answer, yes, we were very focused on it. We're an institutional investor, so we actually had a filter starting with the people who started these SPACs and their commitment to these SPACs, their pedigree. I think, as you probably know, diligence on SPACs is very crucial. And there's been a variety of individuals who have started SPACs of differing quality. I think with that said, we found many of the people we encountered, including many that we decided not to pursue, to be good people and had a decent thesis. But we were fortunate that, you know, we were able to find the Global Partners Acquisition Group that we thought had a meeting of the minds, and kind of the SPACs that we spoke to, they were very focused on our ability to find targets. And I think, you know, going back to your earlier question, I think where we were able to differentiate ourselves is we see a lot of companies, and doing diligence on companies and opportunities is what we do for a living, as opposed to a point in time where some of these SPAC founders were. So we were able to bring that to the table with some of these SPACs that we spoke to, with all the SPACs that we spoke to. And so I think, I'm not sure other parties that would look to acquire SPACs would be able to do that, right? And I think since we're relatively confident that we have enough relationships in the marketplace to be able to find companies and unearth opportunities, the timeline that one encounters when you acquire a SPAC would be less of a challenge for us.
No. And going into, you know, sort of the process, once you started engaging with Stardust, how did you kind of go about triangulating the valuation here, just given, you know, some of the different factors we've mentioned, where commodity prices are, what the timeline of the project itself, and, you know, and some of the performance of some companies that are already out there? What were some of the kind of the key points that you were trying to work between to get to the number?
I mean, ultimately, we obviously relied upon third-party services and valuation firms. I think with that said, part of, I think, what we were able to bring to this process was, while we as a firm do not invest in this sector historically, we've done things generally around clean energy broadly, and we have a pretty broad network of individuals and firms who have done a lot of investments in the lithium space. And so they are able to help us evaluate, you know, Roshan's opportunity, and also take a view on valuation, internal view, which ultimately was supported by these third-party advisors.
And Roshan, you know, it seems like the EV excitement has kind of gone in a lot of different directions. There's been sort of waves of it in the market over the past few years. But, you know, what to you is the most exciting thing happening specifically in the lithium space right now?
You know, what I see is really exciting is the creation of an American ecosystem. So, you know, a lot of noise around the EV space as manufacturers try to create the right product mix. But year over year, month over month, EV adoption is increasing, and quietly, the manufacturers are all launching their plans to switch to a fully EV space. So we're really bullish on EV adoption. And we see that process going along very smooth. And it'll take some more work to build the ecosystem, such as charging. But we're really happy with the way the market is moving. You know, we see now is a great time to develop and build our lithium refinery, first and foremost by unprecedented anticipated demand in this sector. The demand for battery-grade lithium products continues to expand, and over the next few years will escalate substantially, largely driven by EV adaptation. Coupled with rising geopolitical tension and the national security focus of what we're doing, it is a priority for the American government to invest in resilient American supply chains. And then especially given that the IRA creates a premium for American manufactured goods. We have seen a small drawdown in the development of new lithium projects, which would only increase the demand given the lack of future supply by projects not being developed now. We see by proper financing and proper structuring, now is a great time to build a lithium refinery.